Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to one more edition of Politics Done Right. We're starting with a bit of technical difficulties, so bear with us as we straighten this out.
Okay, folks, this is Politics Done Right, and I am not sure what exactly is happening, but it seems like we started out with a problem, and I think it may be on the end. It started probably at Blog Talk Radio because for some reason they weren't playing the intro to the show, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And somehow it starts. Okay, folks, let's do this one more time. Welcome to Politics Done Right. I am Egberto Willis, your host. Sorry for how this program began, but the reality is I haven't a clue what went wrong. It seems like Blog Talk Radio had some technical difficulties unbeknownst to me. But you know what? Who cares? We're getting started with what's going to be a very good show. And why is it going to be a very good show? Because you are here. So let me first get started with why we were not live last week. Last week, Coffee Party board members all met in Boulder, Colorado. We sat there and locked ourselves. Well, at first when we got there, we met with the Denver folks in Denver, Colorado, and spoke to the Coffee Party group in Denver, and you know, told them and explained to them, and got some input from them as far as where we were going and where we should be going. So we had a whole lot of very good, frank, honest, and very fruitful conversations. I wrote a blog piece about where we're going. And you know what? I wasn't going to read it, but because of the start that we had, I think I better get my thoughts together and read it out for you. And here it goes. Coffee Party USA board members are required to meet, and then we'll get into the subject, folks, for I know a lot of you are listening in and calling in for that subject on the Obama deranged syndrome and war, but we'll get to that. But please bear with me. Let's take care of some Coffee Party USA business. Coffee Party USA board members are required to meet in person once a year. This year, Coffee Party USA held its yearly in-person board meeting in Boulder, Colorado. Whenever one tries to herd 7 or 12 board members in one place, something always goes wrong. This time was no different. Janine Louden, Develin Molyneux, and Egberto Willis arrived before noon on Thursday. They had lunch and then checked into the home rented to the for the retreat. After discussing Coffee Party USA history for a few hours, it was time to visit the Coffee Party USA Denver group. Coffee Party Denver, Nicole Casewit invited the group to the meeting. Many questions were asked and answered about many Coffee Party USA events, grievances, and actions. The meeting went extremely well and ended with hugs, back slaps, you name it, we had fun. Steve Justino, one of the Move to Amend, also attended the meeting. He was interested in collaborating with Coffee Party USA to use it to reach on Supreme Court actions. Board of Directors Billy Sears and Vince Lamb missed their planes, and of course, our good buddy Cameron Michaels was unable to attend, but he came via virtual Google Hangout as well to be with us. Vince Lamb was able to get a flight on Friday. Billy Sears was unable to. Director Tanya Jefferson was unable to include flying in her schedule, but as usual, they were all with us virtually, cameras in tow, so we still got to have a strong board meeting with most people in Colorado and a few having to stay on the East Coast and the Midwest. On Friday, directors Janine Louden and Tim Dennehy attended the National Conference on Food in Colorado Springs. Janine represented Coffee Party USA, where she enrolled new members and sold several Coffee Party USA memorabilia. That was pretty cool, according to Tim Dennehy. Tim Dennehy said the following: attending this event allowed the Coffee Party to establish working relationships with large national organizations like the Humane Society of the United States, the Organization for Competitive Markets, Food and Water Watch, the American Antitrust Institute, and others. The effort will continue this weekend as I attend the Public Banking Institute Conference in Santa Fe and later in October. That's a pretty darn good group. I met those guys at the Democracy Convention in Madison, Wisconsin. The outreach continues along the East Coast. The organizations are becoming aware of the Coffee Party and value our principles as they apply to their causes. They all support our efforts to bring issues forward in civil engagement and develop active citizens. It is the hope of these organizations to allow Coffee Party members to learn about their issues and mobilize in constructive ways. I believe the Coffee Party membership will be given opportunities to use our principles to encourage citizens to participate in causes important to membership. We will report all our efforts to membership, and as individuals, we'll pave the way to participation. It will be exciting. Janine Louden said the following about the same event: I assisted the board member Tim Dennehy as he moderated the conference on Friday, September 19th. The lineup of national leaders from diverse aspects of good food movement and spoke strongly about the cost of the failed experiment of international industrial agriculture, the strategies to support local and family-owned farms and ranches, and calling for unity with one another and other organizations interested in supporting the will of the people. We represented Coffee Party USA as good government partner wherever and whenever the elected failed to represent their constituents in favor of the interests of big campaign donors. The Coffee Party was an outreach and media partner for this event. Though the Coffee Party board had different activities on Thursday and Friday, many sub-dialogues were taking place that all came together on Saturday. The Coffee Party USA board set a new direction based on the results of a survey of our members and on ideas new and recycled. Constant information will be provided to our members via our new newsletter and forthcoming email blast. In short, we will be reactivating Free the Elected, Be the Media. You guys know that. You are all the media now. We cannot trust what's called the media today. So you are the media. And of course, Project 435, where we'll have people in every single congressional district in this country. We will be teaming up with several organizations to leverage our synergies. Several contacts with several organizations were already made by Janine in Colorado Springs. Develin and Janine will be participating in several transpartisan events in Washington, D.C. in October. Specifically, on October 15th, Coffee Party USA President Devlin Molyneux is co-facilitating, and board member Janine Loudon will attend a conference of organizations working on criminal justice reform to discuss better collaboration and explore the options for legislative reform. Organizations that will be represented include foundations, faith groups, advocacy groups, political consultants, and more. Specific areas of reform and civil assets forfeiture, offender risk assessment to implement evidence-based practices and smarter sentences. Other areas may emerge, such as mental ill health and substance abuse, treatment, and racial equality, inequality. On October 16, they will attend a day-long meeting of collaborative leaders and organizations to explore more possibilities of working together. People in this group may refer to their work as bipartisan, cross-partisan, transpartisanship, or in however they do it, whatever language is used, the focus is supporting our government to work again, moving past this era of congressional gridlock. Representatives from political reform groups, philanthropic organizations, think tanks, and advocacy groups are attending. Coffee Party USA President Devlin Molyneux is co-facilitating that one as well. October 17th through 19th, Coffee Party USA board member Janine Loudon will represent Coffee Party while President Devlin Molyneux will be working with many organizations during the National Coalition for Dialogue and Deliberation 3-day conference. Dialogue and facilitator professionals will share what is working from around the country. Coffee Party USA will participate in the showcase of Friday evening and host a table to talk about dialogue as activism during a Saturday plenary session. The 2014 Coffee Party board meeting was the most substantive board meeting to date, and folks, I've been to all of them. Our new president, Devlin Molyneux, ends the following prophetic statement that we will intend to make true. She said, "There is something synergistic about having the right people in the right place at the right time that really feels like it is going to propel us into the future. We are going to take off." Folks, go to the website. It's on my website, EgbertoWillis.com, and of course, it's at CoffeePartyUSA.com. I still have to get that place correctly for easier access, but we haven't decided how that's going to be done yet. So this blog is at the website, and it also includes videos of not only discussion of us doing some planning and activities that we did in Colorado, in Boulder, Colorado, but it also includes a statement from each of the board of directors or from most of the board of directors. We couldn't get all of them in the video at this time. We'll probably add those a bit later with where we are intending to take the Coffee Party under the direction of our members and with suggestions from our members. So please go ahead and check that out. If you go to the blog post for this show, it's also in there. So what is this show about today? And if you have questions about any of this, feel free to call in and talk again. The number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. This is a call-in show, and I'd love to hear from you guys. Want to hear what you're thinking. Now that I got some of the Coffee Party specific business out of the way, I hope, first of all, you go to coffeepartyusa.com and be a part of us, be a member, join up. There's a whole lot of stuff that we have going forward. We want you. We need you. Your country needs you. Okay, what are we going to be talking about today? Well, today is going to be an interesting case, an interesting story. I titled it, and it wasn't what I was intended to speak about today, but after watching it on Rachel Maddow, I thought I needed to do a little talking about it because I think it hurts us all. But the title is War and the Obama Derangement Syndrome. This is important, folks. To be clear, I completely disagree with President Obama going to war with ISIS, ISIL, or whatever you want to call these folks. In fact, I believe we have been conned into war. And I have written several blog posts about that. And within this post, I list links to several of the blog posts that I wrote on this. And, you know, it's not just what I'm saying. It's what many other people are saying, what many other people are insinuating as well. We do not belong in another war. There are many other avenues that could have been taken. Going forward, everyone who disagrees with President Obama's actions should speak out against it and try to force our politicians to do what is right. Just like many of us spoke out against President Bush's illegal war in Iraq, we must speak out against this unnecessary war. And let me get out of the blog piece for a while. I don't want to sound callous by saying unnecessary war. After watching the vile nature, the violent violence that is promoted by ISIS, ISIL. It is terrible. It is violent. It is bad. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. That said, America is one nation. Most on the right, the left, the middle, gave President Bush legitimacy the world needed to see, even in disagreement. Unfortunately, President Obama is unable to get this legitimacy from the other side. What is ironic is that President Obama has acquiesced to the military-industrial complex. The president has acquiesced to the neocons. The president has acquiesced to the Republicans. So why can he not get the needed support overtly? This is the Obama derangement syndrome in action. It throws rational thought out the door. GOP Congressman Doug Lambert, Republican of Colorado, attack on the president is the latest case. I want to know what's your thoughts, folks. The blog post for today. Today's blog post is titled, GOP Representative Doug Lamburn is urging generals to resign in a blaze of glory to oppose the president. So I ask, in attempting to undermine a president with his generals during a war, treason, let me back up, I said that wrong. Is attempting to undermine a president with his generals during a war treasonous in nature? GOP Representative Doug Lamburn is urging generals to resign in a blaze of glory to oppose the president Is this not an unpatriotic act? First, I was going to play the piece, but I'm not going to play the piece. I'll just do the blog. GOP Congressman Doug Lamburn sits on the House Armed Service Committee. He is a constant partisan critic of the president. According to the Colorado Independent, Colorado U.S. Rep. Doug Lamburn said that behind the scenes, he and other Republican members of Congress were encouraging military officers to resign in protest over President Obama's foreign policy. And this is him speaking. Let me assure you on this, Lambert told a small gathering of so-called liberty voters in Colorado Springs on Tuesday. It's funny. We left Boulder, Colorado, which is pretty darn close to Colorado Springs, just Sunday. A lot of us, otherwise I would have loved to be, if I had known he was giving a speech, I would have been out there with a camera myself. But anyhow, a lot of us are talking to the generals behind the scenes. That's what he's saying. Hey, if you disagree with the policy that the White House has given you, let's have a resignation. You know, let's have a public resignation and state your protest and go out in a blaze of glory. I haven't seen that very much In fact, I haven't seen that at all in years. So says Representative Doug Lamburn. Rep. Doug Lamburn was speaking to the Liberty Voters, a group of Tea Party voters. He's running against retired Air Force General Herb Halter, a conservative Democrat. General and Democrat candidate Herb Halter had an appropriate response to Lamburn's statement. And I tell you, this was classy. I love the way he said it. He said the following. It is inappropriate for Congressman Lamburn to politicize our military for his own gain, he said in an email. When I joined the Air Force, I swore an oath to execute policy, not make policy. All of our service members take seriously their obligation to serve our nation honorably and follow the chain of command. Our elected officials should not be encouraging our military leaders to resign when they have a disagreement over policy. Congressman Lamburn's statement shows his immaturity and lack of understanding of the American Armed Forces. Someone who serves on the House Armed Services Committee should know better. It's very disconcerting to see Representative Doug Lamburn publicly admit to an act to undermine the president during war. It was most disappointing, however, that he did not admonish the man who asked him the question, who referred to the president as the Muslim Brotherhood in the White House. This Obama derangement syndrome will only be stopped when those that cannot control the most vile nature of their partisanship are voted out of office. Only then can compromise occur between parties and ideas to move the country forward. You know, many folks are taken aback whenever transpartisan groups, nonpartisan groups, single-handedly call out one side in our political equation, like what I'm doing here. It is a must. It is a must that all folk, whenever they see evil, whenever they see wrong, whenever they see someone that is messing with the viability of our country, with the viability of our people, with the viability of the middle class, whomever it is, whatever party they're a member of, it doesn't matter. It is your duty of citizenship. It is your duty of citizenship to call it out. In fact, I will wager, or not wager, but I will say one thing. One of the reasons our politics has reached the state that it has reached is not because of the nitpicking, fighting between folks calling out each other, etc. It's the lack thereof. Think about it. Let's just go back a few years, 2009. If someone had called out and showed how insipid and silly, in fact nonsensical it was, when folks talked about Congress folk somehow throwing grandma under the bus or death panels, as silly as those things were, if they were called out and those who made those statements made as small, simple as they were, and if folks had not made those concepts even a possibility, if folks had made anybody willing to tell a lie of that nature, not only a lie, but something that made no sense, if they had been called out by the media, if they had been called out by independent writers, and I'm not talking here and there, I'm talking consistently because of how wrong it was, we would have never gotten to the point where folks watched that and said, wow, I can lie. I can say something that is utterly silly. I can say something that makes no sense. And you know what? Chuck Todd on NBC would talk about it. Diane Sawyer on ABC would talk about it. And for all those limited readers or those consumers of broadcast news with no further research, they'll eat it up. They'll eat it up. That is how minds get changed. That is how minds get devalued. That is how one makes something that would normally seem silly to even a mind that doesn't care to do much become a norm and become receptive to other idiocies. That is how it's done. And that is where we are in our country. You know, I watch Bill Maher talk about Americans in a sort of a vile way. Last night it was pretty bad. I wouldn't even post it because I thought he got a whole lot of stuff pretty darn wrong. But there are many things that a lot of these satirists say about the American population that I think it is our fault. When I say our fault, I mean those of us that write, those of us that have some sort of platform, it is our right for censoring many times things that need to be said in the hope of not offending a few and the ones who pay the price then. Are those, or it's not those, the ones that pay the price for all of us. And that's where we are at today. That is the fight that we have. The Obama derangement syndrome is just one of many, but it is the fight that we have. Folks, the number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. I see many of you online here listening, but you have not pushed one to talk. I would love to hear what you have to say. For those of you online, I am about to fire up my Twitter here, which I forgot to do, but do remember that hashtag politics done right. I follow that as well, and I didn't fire it up this morning, but I'm about to fire up my hashtag politics done right. So what are your thoughts? Let me first go to 313. How can I help you, or what do you have to offer, my dear friend?
Hi, Egberto. This is Mike up in Lansing.
Hey, and, Mike. How you doing, Mike?
Not bad. It's a pretty nice day out there, and I'm going to go out and enjoy it right after we're done.
Excellent. What are you going to go do, kayaking?
I'm actually going to go over to the campus of Michigan State and do a little bit of watching after the football game gets out.
Good for you, dude. Good for you. What's up, Mike?
Well, of course, I'm a veteran, and I just want to read the oath of commissioned officers here. And, of course, it's I state your name. Having been appointed an officer in the Army of the United States, and this is the Army's, as indicated above in the grade of whatever grade it is, do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservations or purpose of an evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office upon which I am about to enter, so help me God. And that is the oath of commissioned officers. Now, if you also remember that prior to during our initial entry into Iraq, there were generals that disagreed with with then President Bush's decision to go into Iraq that were kind of pushed out. Their careers as an officer is a very political position to be held in any of the militaries. It's highly political. That would be a career ender, and for any officer. And so there were a lot of generals that were and leaders that disagreed, that were pushed aside and basically forced to retire because their career was over with. And that is the kind of thing that, I don't think that Mr. Lamburn, and I use Mr. I shouldn't even be using that term because I have no respect for this man. And some of the other things that he has done, his trying to get him to basically create a mutiny within the military is, to anybody who served in the military or been around the military, is atrocious.
Absolutely. You know, Mike, one time I wrote a blog piece. I'm trying to remember when it was. I think it was a couple of years ago. And I had used the word treason. And a whole lot of folks got on my case. They said I didn't understand the real definition of treason. I looked it up, and in my mind, I stuck by what I said because I really thought it was implicit treason. Now, here I expressed it as a question to ask people in general. If you have people in Congress, if you have a president moving on foreign policy, his duty, what the Constitution says he's supposed to be doing, and you have a whole lot of congressmen Armed Service Committee that are contacting generals, asking them to resign in protest to what the president is doing, while at the same time we're in war. It seems to me that you are actually putting your country at danger, or in danger. It seems to me what you are saying is just because you have a disagreement with the executive, you are going to put the entire military well-being of the country in danger. And my friend, I think that's a classic definition of treason. It's a classic. I looked it up. I didn't outright call it treason on the blog post today, but I sure looked it up and I said, my God. Think about some liberal was out there. I don't care if it's a liberal Democrat or a liberal Republican. Think about a liberal doing something like this and stating it overtly and having it on tape. Think about how the news coverage would be right now. The only person that I saw carrying this live, or not live, but recently, is Rachel Maddow. And one of the reasons I wrote about it today is with the expectation that that's somehow it will grab on, and a lot of people would see it, rewrite about it, write their sign on it, and get it out there. Because what happens is most of America, when these guys are in their cubby holes making these statements, a lot of people are not listening. And then they wake up in the morning with these guys in office again, and they wonder, this is what we're going to have to live with for 2 years again? And get go nowhere again? Like I said, I disagree with the president strongly on going into both Syria and Iraq, and attempting to make ISIL an existential danger. It is not. And you know, yesterday, and I probably am going to cut that out in Bill Maher's piece. Like I said, I didn't like Bill Maher's program last night. I think it was vile. In as much as I am not a religious person, I think he had a very harsh attack on both Christianity and Muslim and Islam that was very uncalled for. You know, I mean, just like I am not a religious person, I respect everybody's right to a religion, and I didn't like what he did. But there were some good parts, right? There were some good parts of his piece that is worth mentioning. But one of the pieces that he said is, let's sort of enumerate this. And by the way, I think I see Jack online. Jack, I'm going to be coming to you next, so please be prepared with your statement, my dear friend. There's one thing that he said, and he tried to map it out. He said, how can bombing them over there stop one or two or three of them from coming over here to do something? The same way we use the term the same silliness that death panels has, that silly way of being or that silly thought, death panels. Anybody that's thinking know that death panels is silly. No politician is going to create a death panel. They couldn't survive it, and it's an immoral thing. So there were never death panels. Sounded silly. That's the same way we're going to bomb them over there to prevent them from coming over here. That's the same type of silly. Because you cannot stop a single man with bombs around his belt from boarding a plane. I don't care how many bombs you drop in Syria, Iraq, Iran, or anywhere else. You can always get a couple of folks with a belt on with bombs if they really want to do it. Where you want to invest your money is in securing your space. If we took the money instead of building bombs and dropping bombs and secured our space, we don't care what else happens. Then we can concentrate on humanitarianism. Then that's when we do that. But stay with me, Mike. I want to bring Jack in, and I'll come back to you, Mike. Jack Golden, how you doing, my friend?
Okay. You hear me?
Yes, I can. Please make your statement, my dear friend.
Okay. I just happened to disagree with you on this because, I mean, I was pretty much neutral on that until we got the beheadings of these people. It's terrible. This should be a war to end all wars.
Jack, let me stop you a second. I want to stop you. Stop. I want to stop you right there. This is very important what you said. And I want you to correct me if I'm wrong. Did you tell me that you would be in agreement that we shouldn't go to war until you saw the beheading of two reporters? Did I understand you correctly?
Yeah, that was it. And maybe this was propaganda, but I think that switched a lot of people from negative to 20% for going into Syria and those places to over 60%. Let me just listen to me. All right.
Sure, go ahead.
I don't. Congress can't even agree on what they're going to do doing a declaration of war. It is a declaration of war in ISIS. It's going to take 3 years to 10 years to get through that. So definition, okay, just bears me out with Mike over there. Definition is never a fact. It's only a matter of opinion. The Webster's or Funken-Wagnalls is official opinion of a definition of treason, for example.
Sure, Jack, I understand. I understand what you're saying, but let me hear your point because I have a couple more I need to go to, but please make your point.
Okay. We got a lot of more important issues to deal with. It was unnecessary. We go back to, I call them, the two Pauls, Paul Wolfowitz and Paul Bremer.
Right.
Cause ISIS to occur.
Yes, you're right.
He got out of Iraq in 2004 as soon as Saddam Hussein was captured, and maybe some people were saying that actually ISIS started was the militant group in Iraq started as soon as we went into Iraq in 2003.
Jack?
So,
Jack?
2001.
Okay, Jack, I need to go to the other call, but let me tell you, first of all, you're right. You're absolutely right. And everything that you see us doing right now is cleanup. Now, the question that one must ask is this the right type of cleanup? I'm going to be back with you, Jack, but let me get 412 in. And then I'll come back to you, my friend. 412, you are hot. What's your name, sir or ma'am?
Egberto, this is Greg in Pittsburgh. How are you?
Hey, Greg, I haven't heard from you in a while, my friend. Talk to me.
I wanted to agree with you on a couple of things. Number one would be that it is incumbent upon every citizen to call out false equivalencies, outright lies, misinterpretations of fact. I think that's one of the greatest challenges that exists today is that people operate, they think about, they read, and they listen to their own bubbles. And I'm not going to make any bones about it. The conservative bubble is wrong on literally everything. Literally everything. Trickle-down economics was a lie. They want to inhibit voting rights and access to the polls to people who they know will vote against. They deny climate science. I mean, the list goes on and on. So as far as I'm concerned, I really applaud and I admire all the work the Coffee Party does. But I guess what I'm trying to say is you guys need to take a stand and quit fooling around. Quit pretending that there's two voices and that there's two sides to every story. They're just
okay.
And
can I stop you right there,
yeah,
Jack? Greg,
sure, go ahead.
Please, here's the deal. First of all, the direction of the Coffee Party is for truth. The direction of the Coffee Party will not be, as you just stated, to try to create false equivalencies. So if you think that is the definition of the Coffee Party, my dear friend, you are wrong. We want guys exactly like you as well who will come out there civilly, facts. Because remember, when you talk about the conservative bubble, you have the conservative leadership that drives that bubble. Our intent is really not to tell somebody not to be a conservative, liberal, or whatever, but to put the truth out there. And personally, Egberto, I am going to take a position. Okay? Whenever I take a position, I do it using my Coffee Party tenets, but I do it as myself. So in order not to, we have many different views. But within this one umbrella, within the umbrella of the Coffee Party, Greg, is a position, a place for your thoughts, my thoughts, and everybody else's thoughts. And it is here that we believe that we can make a difference. And why? Because our tenets allows us to talk to each other. And I can tell when a conservative says something silly, I am going to call him out civilly. I'm not going to go on a soapbox, but I'm going to call him out civilly. So what I'm trying to tell you, Greg, we need your voice. Continue, my friend.
Okay, and obviously I'm perfectly fine having a civil disagreement with people. What I no longer feel compelled to do is try to convince people who are patently wrong and refuse to have a fact-based conversation. I can civilly decide to ignore them and read them.
Amen.
Exactly. Egberto, they are the problem.
Yes,
here's
sir.
Why. It's not about the Republican politicians and the party. It's the people who vote for them that create our problems in society today. The Republican Party relies on the low-information voter. And until we call out our friends, our family, our neighbors for being low-information voters, it's unlikely anything's going to change. And if they won't change, then I'm moving on without them.
They are the problem. Greg, I have complete agreement with your statement. 100% agreement with your statement. Okay? And like I said, I think it is our – if you notice I said before, I don't know if you listened to the part of the show earlier where I said it is our – not only our civic duty, but our duty
right.
as citizens. Our citizenship
right.
requires that.
Right.
Because like I said before as well, if we had nipped things like death panels – in the
right.
butt. If we had nipped those, by the way, Marianne Castiglia had some very good words for what you said. Thank you, Marianne. I also wish you would call in and make some of the statements because you are Marianne Castiglia finds some great information that is there to do exactly what you said. Call out low information voters, but do it the right way. So I'm with you.
Oh yeah,
Greg.
I'm gonna do it in a civil and a fact based way. Now I'm obviously get maybe a little emotional on the phone, and that's kind of just how my voice comes out. But I'm passionate about this notion, and it's part of the reason why I'm still hopeful that in some way the Coffee Party, and I'm not suggesting you get rid of transpartisanship. I just don't believe in it.
You can't have two sides to every issue. There are not two solutions to every problem.
No. Let me correct that. Transpartisanship does not mean two sides at all, because first of all, there are more than two parties, and we recognize that there are more than two parties. There's Republican, Democrat, Green, and a whole bunch of others. Secondly, Greg,
right.
Transpartisan, trans, I think, means like across, you know what I mean? It doesn't mean
yes.
either or.
Right.
So
right.
I go across. Let me tell you, I live in conservative land, and one of the
so
most enjoyable experiences I have, exactly, one of the most enjoyable experiences I have is sitting down, speaking to a whole bunch of conservatives who sit down and say, damn it, Berto, I didn't quite look at it that way. I'll never be a Democrat, but I see what you're saying, and I want to, you know, yeah, we need to work on X, Y, Z. That's the kind of relationships that I want to have. I don't want, like you said, I'm not really trying to convince anybody. I'm just trying to inform, and I'm trying to see get folks who are willing to accept information. And I'll be honest with you, Greg, I think the vast majority of Americans, if when you're approaching them, they don't think you're really in for that attack, in for that kill. I think there are a lot of Americans, I've lived it, I've experienced it, will give you your space. They'll give you your time to talk. I mean, they won't agree with you with everything. They still think I'm a pinko liberal, but they respect the pinko liberal, and they adapt some of the policies from the pinko liberal, if you get what I mean.
Yeah, I do. I understand exactly what you're saying, and I agree with it in principle. I was simply, maybe I wasn't doing a good job of making my point, and my point is that...
No, you made a
problem,
great point.
The problems are well-defined. The solutions are eminently achievable, and if one half of the nation, and actually you're right, you're absolutely right, it's not even a half. It's a minority of individuals
right.
who are the ones who actually show up at primaries, who actually put people like Sarah Palin and I can't remember her name now, from Delaware. Yeah, well, Michelle Bachmann, yeah. Ted Cruz, Louis Gohmert. The people who show up at the polls are the ones
right.
who are putting those people in office. And if we just sit on our asses and stay home and don't say anything and don't do anything and don't go vote,
it's our fault.
Well, shame on us. Exactly.
Let me tell you, Greg. And we're moving forward on that. We are going to be fact-based. And like I tell you, we need you on board. Let me go to 210. And by the way, Greg, I haven't seen you in the newsroom lately. Let's do something about that, my brother.
I'll think about
All
it,
right?
Alberto. Thanks. All right.
All right, buddy. Okay, 210. Is this my buddy John from San Antonio?
Yes, it is. Been a long
John,
time.
John, I haven't heard from... I've been missing you. Where have you been, my friend?
Well, you know, I've kind of had pretty strong disagreements with you, and so you know, I wasn't sure if I was you know, when the right time to call you was, but I decided.
Let me
to
stop
to
you
listen.
Right there, John. John, let me stop you right there. I practice what I preach. I had a feeling that. The reason I hadn't heard from you in 5 or 6 shows is because of that. But how long have you known me? I like the disagreements, and it doesn't matter if we disagree. We have to prove that we can disagree and still communicate. I know you disagree a lot on what I've been talking about with Syria and Iraq, and you know what? That is okay. So continue, my dear friend.
Okay. Let me first start off with, you know, I know you talk about civility and all that, but, I mean, you've been pretty harsh in your condemnation for people who don't agree with you on the situation in Syria and Iraq. You know, you say things like people have been conned. You say that the president has acquiesced to the military-industrial complex, that he's acquiesced to the neocons, that he's acquiesced to the Republicans. I disagree with all three of those statements. You know, he hasn't done that. Here's what happened. I mean, when ISIL started gaining ground, basically he saw that they were going to take over Erbil. They were 30 miles outside of Erbil. We had American boots on the ground already, advisors in Erbil. He didn't want to risk them getting killed. He didn't want to have Iraq fall, have Baghdad fall, all these other cities, have fallen. 4 million people, ISIS has control of 4 million people in Iraq, you know, that they actually have control over. And so, you know, I think that what you're saying, there's a lot of there's an incredible amount of false narrative going on that you're saying. And this is not about acquiescing to the military-industrial complex. And, you know, I also don't agree with a lot of things people are saying also. I mean, I don't agree that we should be bombing Syria. I don't agree that people should be so frightened over beheadings. I think that's ridiculous. I think what is the difference of being beheaded when you have people, you know, hundreds of people being lined up and shot in the head? You know, that's much worse than one person being beheaded. I think the all the fear about beheadings and all the fear about actually attacking the homeland is terrible for the country. The nation is been surrendered to fear, just like they did right after 9/11.
John, can I stop you right there, because it's important. I think you just made the point that I have been trying to make. First of all, you gave the perfect narrative about Erbil and us being run over and how to stop them from doing that. Okay? I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with the president bombing those guys to protect those assets. I don't have a problem for a lot of what you're saying. And that is why I wished folks would read sort of between the lines. When I talk about being conned into war, I'm not talking about the kind of war you're talking about. By no means that I think somebody that reads as much as you do can be conned. What I am actually describing is what is exactly occurring. However, we are going back on a war footing. And when I make the statements that I make about guys in a pickup truck with guns, and I am serious about that. Yes, they've captured several of the military equipment that we gave to Iraq. That's true. But you know what? All those things need something called resupply. And the reality is, we control the resupplying of those items. Here's what drives me. When I talk about the military-industrial complex, why do I use that specifically? Because, you know, those tanks that they stole, the bullets that they, the missiles that they shoot have to be resupplied. You know, all those equipments that they stole, all of that needs resupplying. You know who makes all the equipment to resupply that? We do. America does. The military-industrial complex makes those. And what is occurring today is that they're going to be making their monies on both sides of the equation. They're going to be making their money on resupplying those guys, and they're going to make their money on shooting it down. So there are other ways that we as Americans, as the American government, could actually temper ISIS without having to go on the war footing that we're going on right now. But nobody's talking about that.
That's not true. I mean, they are talking about it. I mean, I mean, you have to read a little bit deeper. I mean, you have to really put some time into it. But, I mean, people are talking about trying to cut off the funding, and this is why they're also bombing the oil fields. They're bombing the oil fields in Syria. They're bombing the oil fields that ISIS controls in Iraq, and that's why that's happening. I mean, you know, I also disagree with this notion, and this is like such a strong, you know, liberal,
right.
And I hate to, you know, because I'm a strong liberal, but I mean, there's a lot of false narratives, and one of the false narratives we just talked about before, and that is, you know, it's ISIS didn't exist or Al-Qaeda didn't exist before, and, you know, and I mean, there's a certain amount of truth to that in Iraq, but I mean, the idea that Wahhabism, you know, which is basically what ISIS believes in. I mean, that is something that has very little to do with us. I mean, anybody can, if your mindset is, you know, this is the way the world should exist, and we're gonna basically use violence to try to have this happen, to take over the world, to create a caliphate, okay, go ahead.
I don't look. Here's the issue.
But
anyone who
can I. Can I?
We don't have much time.
Point is that this is from, you know, the culture that they believe in, and so, you know, let's say when we got out of Iraq and there was very, very few people, you know, who were in Al Qaeda in Iraq, okay, and then when Syria happened, when Assad started bombing and you know, killing people, and the civil war was started in 2011, all these jihadists came in, and now they're fighting each other. There are like four or five different jihadi groups, which are basically all Wahhabists, and they're fighting each other. That's how screwed up they are. You know,
yeah,
they can't even agree. Go ahead.
We're going to have a long conversation on this, and you should have been calling in the other shows so that we could have the dialogue over several shows about this. But I want the show is going to be coming to a close pretty soon, and I want to I really want to get into the meat of that, and I hope that we don't get into this position of and when I say us, I'm talking about all the people that listen to my show. Into that position about holding firm on particular grounds. Because, look, there's a whole lot that you say in the dialogue that you just provided that I agree with. But I think where I disagree is, how do we handle it? How does America go into action for it? I'm not at all. I cannot possibly disagree with what you said about Wahhabism, and I cannot possibly disagree with you when you say, well, look, a lot of this was there before. Those are all truths, but they were truths before the first war in Iraq. There are a lot of things that were truths that are truths. The thing about it is, how do we as the American military handle it? And I think, believe it or not, while we may agree a whole lot on the reality, the facts on the ground, what I think we disagree with is what has to happen. I don't think I was disloyal to truth with a lot of what I said, with anything that I've said. I don't think I was disloyal to truth. Maybe, I mean, a lot of folks would say, well, why are you saying Khan? I mean, the Khan doesn't apply to a John. John actually thinks that a particular stance needs to be made. I don't. I think that I don't think certain stances should be made. But I tell you what, John, because you called in, I am going to have a show specifically on ISIS, ISIL. I'll try to do that next week, and I'll write it up and do the research, because I think this is something that we really have to get down. One of the reasons I'm strongly opposed to the war is because of where it's going. I know I do not disagree with the facts on the ground that you're talking about, but I think it's still a danger what we're actually approaching. But we only have a short amount of time, so I really have to hold everybody to 10 seconds. So, John, give me a 10-second closer, and we'll continue this next week.
Well, I mean, it's great to have a conversation, and I'm glad we can have this conversation because, you know, if – in a lot of countries, you can't, and I don't mean to get too cliched, but I mean, that is the truth.
Thank you very much for calling in, John. You were missed. Greg Rusek.
The only reason we're bombing overseas again is because we're a country of cowards. We're playing exactly into ISIL's hands.
Thank you very much, Greg. Mike, give me a quick 10 seconds.
Nobody is surprised about an ISIL or somebody coming in and filling the vacuum that was going to be created no matter what we did after we left Iraq.
That is a very, very important point you just made, dear Mike. And I know John agrees with that. Solutions differently, however. Jack, I really got to hold you to 10 seconds.
Okay. Freedom of speech. That's the whole issue here is freedom of speech.
Thank you. I got to hold you to freedom
limited.
Of speech. Thank you,
yeah.
Sir. I got to leave you there. Now, folks, thank you very much for calling into the show. Next week, I am going to do better. I'm going to try to start the show a little quicker, and we'll talk about ISIS, ISIL. I have some research to do, of course, because we know John will be here. But anyway, folks, please do remember, we have three different shows going right now. Press One for Democracy with Don Aronson. We have that's on Mondays at 10 p.m. Eastern. On Thursdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, we have Lunch with Loudon. And on Saturdays, you're here with me, Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis. Folks, thank you very much for giving me this time. I know your time is valuable. You have a wonderful Saturday. And remember, Coffee Party on. Go sign up at coffeepartyusa.com. A wonderful day.